What's up, guys? Welcome back to SEC Smoke. It's your boy JP, better known in Sooner Nation now as Jalen Posey. And on this show, you know, it's no bias, it's just smoke. And today, my friends, we have a Georgia fan, a bulldog, if you will, Mr. John. So I'm going to go and let him introduce himself, man. How you doing, bro?
Man, fantastic, Jalen. Thanks for having me on. I'm John Smith, also known as John Tweet Sports on the Twitter machine. Excited to talk about the Dogs, a longtime Georgia fan, a rabble rouser at the Bulldog Bourbon Social Club, which is our Georgia tailgate club that we have down in Athens. So excited to be here and talk about the Dogs.
Yeah, it's going to be an interesting season, man. You guys have had such a run here in the last, you know, really 5-6 years. Kirby Smart's done an excellent job down there in Athens. And so, you know, using this opportunity to kind of get you on and talk a little bit, learn more about the Bulldogs and everything like that, what you guys got going on. And we finally get to play each other this year, man. We'll get into that a little bit deeper. But as most people know, we were slated before we even moved to the SEC to have a series. And then we finally moved, and then it got, you know, pushed back a few years. First game, I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, was supposed to be in 2023. But now, instead, we're playing in 2026. So that's going to be a fun one, man. But yeah, I'm glad to have you on, bro. You are one of the only programs right now in college football that I have to admit we got to take a backseat to at this very moment. You guys are rolling. That's hard for me to say, you know, especially as a blue blood, you know, fan of blue blood program, because I don't want to back down anybody, but I'm going to give you your due, man. You guys have done an excellent job in getting into that. Kirby Smart, I believe, bro, is seen as the best coach, maybe if not in college football, certainly in the SEC. His track record speaks for himself, right? Back-to-back national championships, numerous SEC championships, SEC championship appearances. Before that, obviously, his track record as a defensive coordinator was impeccable. And he's just done such a great job turning Georgia from what was a school that, like, yes, had a respected football culture, but it's certainly, you know, turned that has become the best coach in your history. And it's turned you guys into, you know, hey, you win a few more championships than we're talking about Georgia, even in a more rarefied air over time. So he's the best coach. We know that. Mm-hmm. I think we could lay the foundation there. Who do you feel like are the top five coaches in the SEC after him?
Man, this is such a tough question. Mostly because it's subjective, right? So what's your criteria for top? You know what I mean? Like, we could have this debate all day long. But I will say this. I do agree, Kirby Smart. I think Kirby Smart is the best coach in college football still. I think you have some coaches that have obviously made a push. You have Georgia that hasn't won a playoff game in 3 years. And so there is that kind of, you know, a little bit of that is Kirby, you know, moving into Dabo Sweeney territory, et cetera, which I do not believe because he won back-to-back SEC championships. Mm-hmm. But I think Kirby Smart is number one. I think from there you can have a debate, right? But I'll give you my top five. Yeah. And I think, you know, for my money, I think I'm gonna go Kirby Smart. I'm gonna go people are gonna hate me, but I'm gonna go Kalen DeBoer second, and just because following Nick Saban, no one was gonna succeed in that job. I think Kalen DeBoer last year, I think finding a way to, you know, kind of backdoor into the SEC championship, finding a way to win a playoff game, despite what happened versus Indiana, despite what happened, you know, Oklahoma, like all these things. I think Kalen DeBoer, you know, he finds ways to win, and he's beat Kirby Smart twice. So it's like, all right, you know, got to figure that out. I'm going to put Steve Sarkisian third. So I'm not a huge believer in Sark. I think his resume has spoken for itself in terms of, you know, he's made the playoffs. He's won a playoff game last year. I think was an anomaly. We'll see how he does this year. I'm gonna go with Mike Elko fourth. We can debate it if you want. But I'm going to put Brent Venables fifth. And the reason I'm going to put Brent Venables in my top five, mm-hmm. I had him, you know, there. Usually when I rank this, he's usually sitting around six or seven. But I was looking, man, last year, and Brent Venables was in a situation last year where I think Oklahoma fans were ready to fire this guy. Like, I think he was in a situation early in the year, especially with that loss to, you know, to Texas. Sitting there, in a place where it's like, all right, well, you know, Oklahoma, they lose to Texas, then they, you know, turn around and beat South Carolina, but then they lose to Ole Miss. And it's like, all right, this guy, you know, he might not make it. It looked really good, you know, versus Michigan, you know, looked good versus what turned out to be not a great Auburn team. But then he started going. But Brent Venables, the thing that I think makes him a top five coach in the SEC is because of his ability. What we saw last year is his ability to just find ways to win. And I think it took him a little bit. People have to remember Brent Venables was not a head coach in college football before he came into Oklahoma. And I think for me, him finding ways to win last year, especially with the Mateer injury, you know, especially with like just stuff that happened with that team, finding ways to win, finding ways to make the college football playoff, especially with a new coordinator and you know, kind of all of that situation. I like Brent Venables a lot. Now, we'll see if he can sustain it. But I think if you look, if people say, you know, people say Lane Kiffin hasn't won anything that Brent Venables has not won. Mm-hmm. Right? Like, I mean, I think like you can talk about, you know, like in the SEC, it's like, all right, you know, Pete Golding coached Ole Miss in the college football playoff. You know, it's you sit there, you can throw in I saw somebody that put Eli Drinkwitz in their top five or six. You know, like people are throwing around some crazy stuff. Josh Heupel. I just don't think – I think when you get to that fifth spot, I think you can throw around a bunch of names. You could put, you know, Drinkwitz. You can put Josh Heupel. You can put you can't put that many people there. Actually, now that I go down the list, I'm like, who would it be? But I think Brent Venables, for my money, I think is a top five coach in the SEC.
Man, Oklahoma fans are gonna love you for that, man. Follow him right now.
Well, they listen, and I'm not. Hey, listen, trust me. Please follow me on Twitter. You will find like I don't blow smoke. I want my bend at like my initial. You know, my gut is like I want to come on the Oklahoma podcast and tell you why Brent Venables is not that good of a coach, and tell you why Kirby Smart is going to beat him by 40 when he comes to Athens, and tell you why, you know, like that's what I want to do. But I think Brent Venables, man, I think it took him a while, took him longer than it should at a program like Oklahoma. Mm-hmm. I'll admit that, but took him a while. But when you look at the coaches in the SEC, I mean, you know, so it's Lane Kiffin, it's Sarkisian, it's DeBoer, it's Kirby Smart, Josh Heupel, who else? What other coach? Mike Elko, I guess. Now, there's six coaches, I guess, that have made the college football playoff in the SEC, right? And Brent Venables is one of them.
Yeah,
six or seven, and Brent Venables is one of them. So, I think that speaks volumes for what that guy was able to do, especially with Mateer injury, and especially after those two losses early in that SEC schedule.
Yeah, no, I appreciate it, man, and I know you don't. You know, I did my research on you, bro. I know you're not one of those. You know, I'm coming, you know. So I was actually surprised that you put him at five.
Yeah.
You know, and I can understand the arguments for him not being five. Mm-hmm. You know, I understand, like you said, if you put Lane Kiffin there, if you put Heupel there. I don't understand if you put Drinkwitz there, in my opinion. And, you know, I had a conversation with a Missouri fan, my friend Maggie. You know, Johnson.
Oh, Maggie! Shout out Maggie Johnson.
Shout out Maggie. You know, Maggie's on the show a few weeks ago. We had that same conversation. But I think the reason Brent Venables is okay at that spot is because he's a respected coach. While he's you know, finding his footing as a head coach, like there's no doubt in anybody's mind the pedigree that he has as a coach in general, especially on the defensive side of the ball. Like, really, in my opinion, it's between him and Kirby for who's been the best defensive coordinator of the last 10 to 15 years in college football, right? Like, mm-hmm. both of them have won multiple national championships, you know, 2-3 as defensive coordinators. And so the coaching pedigree is there. Both of them have sat under Hall of Fame coaches, right? Like, Kirby sat under the best, obviously. But, you know, Brent Venables didn't sit under any shabby coaches himself. Bob Stoops, Hall of Fame. Kansas State played for, you know, Bill Snyder, you know, coach for him first, Hall of Fame, right? Dabo Sweeney is going to be a Hall of Fame coach. So he's got his share of resources. Continuing on that point, man, like we're talking about what things look like this year. And I would love to, you know, just briefly go down the Sooners' expectations and just kind of schedule as, along with the Bulldogs' schedule. And kind of following up on something you had said previously, I think that when you look at the Sooners' outlook for the year, man, a lot of it hinges on their offense. Because I think that we know that what the defense is going to be. Just like, you know, every year with Georgia, you know that defense is going to be salty because under Kirby, it's not going to be. Right? It's same for Brent at this point. He's got it rolling. He got the dogs. You know what I mean? Like, we got guys at every level that are going to be high-round draft picks. David Stone might be top 10, you know, draft pick this coming year. So, with that being said, the offensive side of the ball, that's where I'm most excited. And we talked about the evolution of coaching and everything like that. And I feel like Brent has done his best to assemble as best he can a great staff offensively now as well. Like, we had guys that, you know, were hired from within or, you know, our guys at the running back and tight end rooms, but those were the rooms that were kind of lackluster, if you will. Now, DeMarco Murray, you know, for his credit, he's a great running backs coach. It just felt like, for whatever reason, we just couldn't figure it out here. And he left and is with the Chiefs now, you know? So it's not like, it's not like he has
no good value coach.
He's now an NFL running backs coach with that franchise. So it's not like he has no value, but it just felt like it couldn't figure it out here. But we go out and we get another guy who's seen as a top, you know, probably three running back coach in all college football, and Dylan McCullough, who's, you know, the two guys that he recruited and he mentored this past year just went, you know, both in the first round, and Jeremiah Love and Jadarian Price, right? Because he was at Notre Dame previously, went to be the Raiders running backs coach, and now he's at Oklahoma. And so you know, really at the worst, stay on a line in terms of like the pedigree of your running backs coach, but maybe even elevate it. You definitely, in my opinion, elevated the tight end room, which I love Joe John Finley, but that had been a sore eye. And I think, while yes, Jason Witten has not coached tight ends in college before, you'd have to prove it to me that he couldn't coach tight ends first, I guess, because he's a Hall of Fame tight end. That's Jason Witten.
Yep.
He's a Hall of Fame tight end, man. Like, you know, we're not just going to sit here and say, oh, he doesn't know what he's doing or how to teach. And so those are as big of upgrades, I feel like, as you could have at position coach positions. And so looking at that, I think the offense should be markedly better. Now, if John is continually healthy, my outlook for the season, man, has been 10-2 because I do think we have another tough schedule. I do have us dropping to you guys in Athens. I don't think that we're going to go to Athens and beat you. If we do, that is icing on top for me, you know. But I'm not expecting us to go in there and be world beaters. Now, I don't think we're going to get blown out. But, you know, I think it'll be a good competitive game. But I do think that right now where your program is at, it will be hard pressed for us to be able to go in there on the road in Athens and pull out a dub at this very moment. And obviously knowing you guys would be favored. My other loss that I did have, I think, was at our A&M later at home. I mean, we're good at home generally, but we've been known in the Brent Venables era to drop a game. And A&M's a tough team. Elko, you know, had them in the playoff last year. They have as much talent as anybody as well. Like, they got a lot of talented rosters that they've stacked over the years, transfer portal, everything like that. They have Marshall Reed coming back, and say what you want about him, but, you know, he still can get some things done. But those are the two that I have us dropping. But I do believe that we would win 10 games and be in prime position to make the playoff.
Yeah, no, I love it. I think one point I want to make a little bit of just real quick about DeMarco Murray, who, you know, who I thought, to your point, it's not that he doesn't have value. Obviously, landed a really good job with the Chiefs, but if you look at Dylan McCullough, like, I mean, the guy has coached running backs, you know, for 25 years, right? And I think there is something to, you know, DeMarco Murray. Like, he had 1 year at Arizona as a running backs coach, and then was it Oklahoma, right? And so I think there is yeah. something to like to bringing in somebody who's been a lot of different places, seen a lot of different things, right? I think on that side. And then Jason Witten, I think is very similar, where he coached, you know, he was a head coach at high school for 5 years. We'll see, but to your point, like about, you'll have to prove to me that, you know, you can't coach tight ends. I think having somebody coming in who has either a ton of experience, like Dylan McCullough, and Jason Witten, who's like has been coaching like this level, these guys for 5 or 6 years, younger even, you know, I think is going to be big for Oklahoma. In terms of like your schedule, yeah, I think Oklahoma, I mean, 10-2 feels right. I don't expect Oklahoma to beat Georgia. I do expect it to be a close game, but man, I think Oklahoma, the good and the bad for Oklahoma fans this year is you're going to find out real quick, like what you got. Cause you got at Michigan and at Georgia in the first four games. Right. So, I mean, you're coming into it. Like, you know, you better wake up ready to fight. Cause it's those both are going to be tough games. Cause Kyle Whittingham up there in Michigan, man, that guy, his teams at Utah found ways to drag really good, really explosive, athletic teams down into the mud and just have a rock fight. And so I think like that, and then Georgia, you know, playing in Athens, I mean, Kirby Smart has lost 8 SEC games in the last 8 years. And so I, you know, it's a tough team to beat, especially your first SEC game of the year. And you know, on the plus side for Oklahoma coming into Georgia is that Georgia, you know, plays at Arkansas, but I mean, Georgia doesn't play anybody before you're playing Oklahoma, right? So you got Tennessee State, you got Western Kentucky, and then you play at Arkansas. So I think Oklahoma is going to be Georgia's first real challenge versus Oklahoma will have already played at Michigan and had kind of that, you know, gut check, punch in the mouth. No shade on Arkansas, but I think Georgia's going to blow the doors off Arkansas. And mostly just because that Ryan Silverfeld made a joke on his weekly radio show last year when he was at Memphis about Georgia driving and, you know, something like that. And so he made this joke that went viral, and I'm like, man, Kirby Smart got a long memory, dude. Like, you're about to get your first SEC game is versus Kirby Smart, and you're out here making a joke. He didn't know he's going to be SEC head coach when he did it, but
yeah.
Now, but I think Oklahoma, you know, 10-2 feels about right. But I wouldn't be surprised. Like, I wouldn't be surprised at all if you know, if Oklahoma like finds a way to 11-1. I also wouldn't be surprised if Oklahoma, you know, finds a way to 9-3. I think anything below 9-3 will be unacceptable for this Oklahoma football team, though.
Agreed. No, 100%. Anything below 9-3, I think you start. Brent Venables, I think, with last year's cooled his seat significantly.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that if you get, like, if you're 8-4, I don't think it's okay, we're done. I think it's still, you know, maybe you look at what happened in the season, what you need to figure out, you know, depending on how those things happen. If it's 7 wins or less or something like that, then you might be talking about that. I can't see that happening unless something catastrophic happens, but no. I digress.
But, and I would just say, I mean, you look at the schedule, right? So you got at Michigan, you got at Georgia, you got Texas, you got, I mean, we'll see, like, some of these teams too can always, in the SEC, can always jump up, like, you know, you mess around, it's like, all right, well, here's South Carolina, you know, that's going to come in and try to punch in the mouth. But you got, you know, at Florida, Ole Miss, Texas A&M, you know, and then at Missouri. It's like, I mean, that's – especially that stretch with, you know, you start the season with at Michigan. Well, you start – so UTEP, at Michigan, then New Mexico, but then at Georgia and then mm-hmm. Texas. It's like you got mm-hmm. – you're going to probably have three – potential at least three top 15 teams, two top – five teams probably in your first five games, right? So I would just say for Oklahoma fans too, I mean, this world that we live in, I mean, Georgia, we saw it as Georgia fans. I mean, we saw it, you know, it's like the world that you live in with transfers, with having to play a lot of younger guys, with having to play teams that are just, you know, a lot, there's a lot more parity. Like, you know, Georgia went from, I think Georgia lost one SEC game. Well, Georgia went 2021 and 2022. Georgia was undefeated in SEC play back-to-back years. Lost one SEC game in like 3 years to losing two, you know, the first year of expansion in the 12-team college football playoff, right? It's like, and that's simply because like when teams get better and there's more parity, like that stuff's going to happen. So when I say 9-3, when I say I could see 9-3, I mean, I think 9-3 with this schedule is absolutely a playoff team, right? Like I think with this schedule, there's no way that you go 9-3 and don't make the college football playoff. I would be surprised though if it's anything less than 9-3.
Yeah, agreed, man. I agree completely. Well, how do you feel, man, about the Bulldogs?
Yeah, man.
Outlook this year, bro. Let me see.
Yeah, well, listen. Everybody knows Georgia's going 7-5. The whole national media is doubting Georgia. That's a joke.
Yeah.
We every year. No, Georgia won when they beat TCU 65-7 in a national championship game. Nolan Smith, who now plays for the Philadelphia Eagles, held up a newspaper. They asked him. They were interviewing him. The guy was just going nuts. And he said, man, people said we were going 7-5, and look at us now. You know, so we always say, like, yeah, people were saying we're going 7-5. Yeah, 7-5. I think Georgia. I think Georgia. This year, it's interesting to me, right? Because again, I on paper, this schedule is set up really well for Georgia, right? You get Oklahoma in Athens. You start off the season with Tennessee State, Western Kentucky. You play at Arkansas. Then you get Oklahoma, and then you get Vanderbilt in Athens, right? So you get two home games versus Oklahoma and Vanderbilt, and then you play at Alabama, and we'll see how that goes. But then it's Auburn, it's Florida, but then you play at Ole Miss, but then it's Missouri, South Carolina. It just feels like the type of season that Georgia should go through this season at 11-1 at worst. And I think for me, you know, it's the one that makes all Georgia fans nervous is that game at Alabama, because for whatever reason, Kirby Smart has the yips and just can't, you know, it's like, dude, there, it's one thing to lose to Nick Saban, you know, and it's like, all right, well, he was, you know, he was your mentor. You were on his staff, you know, the mental games and what he knows about you. And he was your boss and all those things, but then to turn around and lose to Kalen DeBoer, twice okay, well, this might be an Alabama problem and not a Nick Saban problem.
Yeah.
And so that game makes me nervous. I think the game at Ole Miss, you know, makes me a little bit nervous just because not because I think Ole Miss is going to be as good as they were this year, but just because those late games on the road in the SEC get tough. When you get November and you go on the road, it's like stuff happens. But if I look at this, you know, I could definitely see Georgia going, you know, 11-1. There's no reason, you know, that one could be Oklahoma, it could be Alabama, could be Ole Miss, but there's no reason why Georgia should do worse than that on paper. The other thing I like about Georgia this year is that Georgia last season had 65% of their roster was sophomore or younger. The youngest team in the SEC, maybe the youngest team in college football, and won the SEC. And so now you have that continuity and most of those guys returning, and now they're a year older, right? And so now you're in a place where Gunnar Stockton is in his second year as a starter instead of his first year as a starter. You got guys who Ellis Williams, who is a freak at tight end, you know, 6'7", just, you know, a freak. He was a true freshman last year, played a lot. I mean, you got Ethan Barbour, who's another freak at tight end, who broke his leg in the – third game of the season, something like that, missed the rest of the year. He'll be there. You got Nate Frazier, the running back room, Chauncey Bowens. Like, you just got a lot of guys on that offense side of the ball. And then more importantly, on the defense side of the ball, you've got guys like Ellis Robinson, who has a year under his belt. Ellis Robinson, he was one of the highest recruited cornerbacks coming out 2 years ago. Didn't play a lot his first year at Georgia just because Georgia had, you know, some NFL caliber DBs that were on the team. But finally got a good bit of playing time last year. And in the game versus Tennessee, he just got torched. Like, he was getting lit up in that game. And that was the game that he grew up. The rest, and then from there, he kept getting better and better. By the end of the year, he was one of the best DBs in college football. So I think you've got a good mix of guys who have just grown up. And I think that's going to be huge for Georgia, especially on that defensive side of the ball at the key positions. And then the offensive line, hopefully, you know, last year Georgia was playing Juan Gaston, was playing Dontrell Glover, who were two true freshmen. Like, you just had guys, they were just young. And I don't think people realize that about Georgia. I don't think people realize, like, oh, wait a second. Like, they were SEC champs, and half of their offensive line was true freshmen. They're SEC champs, and, like, you had guys, you know, playing on the defensive side of the ball that, you know, were either true freshmen or were just, like, it was their first real year of playing, of getting playing time. So the biggest question for Georgia is just going to be at wide receiver. And that's mostly just because that's been the biggest question for Georgia for, like, the last 2 or 3 years. And Georgia went out and got Isaiah Kanyon from Georgia Tech, who I think will be, you know, really, really good guy, really good receiver. It doesn't have a lot of flashy numbers, but from last year, but is a big guy who can go up and get it. London Humphreys is coming back. And then you got a lot of young guys, Talon Taylor, CJ Wiley, a lot of highly recruited wide receivers that will get their first playing time this year. So we'll see, man. I think with Georgia, like I said, on paper, it feels 11-1. Feels like where, if Kirby Smart is in Kirby Smart form with the talent you have, the experience that they now have on the team, that feels like where this team should be.
Yeah, I don't disagree with you at all, man. Like, I think you guys have, I mean, you've recruited incredibly well the last really 4 to 5 years. Mm-hmm. Transfer portal included. And so you've got the talent, even if you're young, you know, the talent's there. You got the coaching staff. I think you have, as well as your defense, I think your quarterback, I really like Gunner. I have Gunner as my second best SEC quarterback. I made a list weeks ago, that I've stuck to. I had Trinidad 1. I had Gunner 2. And, you know, right behind them, I had Arch, just because I think that he's gotten a lot of flack, but I think we did see some good things, towards the end of the year last year. Now, do I think that if John Mateer is healthy, he can be better than Arch? I do. And I would gladly put him in that third spot, but I'm not going to be a homer guy, you know. I believe in seeing what's in my face. And so I got to see it from John first. But anyways, Gunner, for sure, I believe it is in that upper echelon. You know, I've even had some people that felt like he's better than Trinidad, that he should be the best SEC quarterback. And so I think when you have a guy that's seen as the best, or one of, if not the best quarterbacks in the SEC, on top of a traditionally really good to great defense, there's no reason you guys shouldn't be at the top of the SEC yet again. Now, I hope that we get, you know, come into Athens and steal a win from you, but I hope that you guys go 11-1. Other than that, you know what, bro, I mean? Like,
that's exactly as you should, man. That's exactly as you should. And I will say this, like, again, y'all Oklahoma fans, like, come on, follow me on Twitter. I'll follow you back. You'll realize, like, I don't blow smoke. I think Oklahoma, like, I really do. Like, if you look at Georgia's schedule, who has the best chance of beating Georgia this year? For my money, it would be Oklahoma. Like, if you look at the schedule, like, if you look at all things considered, because it's early in the season, because Oklahoma will have already had a Power Four test, because, you know, what I've already said that I think about, you know, Brent Venables and this coaching staff, like, that's who I would pick if somebody said, hey, you got to gun to your head, you got to give me one team that's going to be Georgia this year. Like, I that's who I would pick. Now, that being said, I think you totally should feel that way about Oklahoma, not just because of you're an Oklahoma fan, but because of those things. But man, it is Georgia. like Gunnar Stockton, you mentioned Gunnar Stockton. I think people are going to be surprised by Gunnar Stockton. I think people were surprised by him last year, but it was kind of like the hometown. It was a little bit of like a hometown hero being surprised. You know what I mean? It's like a guy who he grew up in Raven County, Georgia, country guy, drives an old truck. Like, you know, it's kind of like one of those throwbacks. Like, oh, yeah, that's a, you know, kind of like a cute surprise. Like, oh, yeah, that's cute. You know, that guy. And he can make plays. Oh, that's cool. You know, this year, I think people are going to truly see the evolution of Gunnar Stockton, mostly in his mechanics and the way that he actually, you know, kind of his footwork in the pocket and becomes a more of a true kind of pocket passer with his legs. Cause his natural instinct, and you saw it last year in his first year as a starter, his natural instinct is to take off. Like the guy is just, I mean, I don't know, man. Some of those hits that he takes, I'm like, dear God in heaven. Like we're Georgia fans over here praying, like, you know, please let the kid get up, because like he just got way late again, because he's just a baller. He's just a gamer. But his natural instinct is to run, like instead of hanging there and throw and let it rip. And I think you're going to see a lot more of him hanging in there. I also think just the Georgia offensive line being more experienced is going to be big. That always helps the quarterback look a little better. Mateer, I think totally, you know, I mean, I don't think the guy went from what he did at Washington State and then all of a sudden, like, and some of the stuff he's doing early in the year, and then all of a sudden, like, forgot how to play football. Like, I think the guy was legitimately injured. I think when you get injured in the middle of the season and when, like, you're kind of working your way back, the way that you practice changes, your routines, the way you take reps, like, all that stuff changes, and it can really mess you up. If he can stay healthy and keep in that rhythm, like, I think he can totally be one of the best, if not the best quarterback in the SEC. I think to your point, it's like we got to see his health. Like for me, it's just, it's how his health goes is how his play is going to go. But I think, yeah, for my money, I think John Mateer and Gunnar Stockton, I mean, it's going to be fun. It's going to be fun to watch in Athens in September, man. I hope a lot of Oklahoma fans will make it down, because it'll be a great time for sure.
Yeah. Texas fans, you hear that? Man, they're always saying something about how, you know, Mateer was, you know, he was you know, Bush League in there. It wasn't really a real injury. It didn't affect his brain. And I'm like, I appreciate you so much for saying what you said about how it changes things mentally for you when you go through an injury like that, and then you try to force yourself back. Like like you said, it changes the way you practice. It changes your timing, the way you throw, which we just saw a full article on that come out last week, how he said like he couldn't even grip the ball, you know? Like, and everyone's like, oh, it's an excuse. And I'm like, okay, bro. Okay.
Dude, yeah, man, listen, like you, at the end of the day, like you, ball knowers like yourself, clearly a ball knower, you know that so much, the quarterback position, the quarterback and wide receiver connection in general, but the quarterback position specifically is the position that benefits the most from reps and routine of just like doing the same thing over and over and over, calling the same play, doing the same footwork, doing the same reads, making the same throw to the same spot over and over and over. And when you injure your hand, especially your hand or your foot, maybe your shoulder, but like there's two or three places that when you injure as a quarterback, it doesn't matter how severe the injury is, but if you can't grip the ball, that's pretty severe. But either way, it's like, dude, when it changes, like, okay, well now, you know, now maybe I'm not throwing on Monday or Tuesday. I'm waiting until Wednesday and I'm getting treatment on Monday or Tuesday. Like it's just a different, like, mentally, but also just the number of reps. And when you have that happen in the middle of a season, when you've spent, you know, you start doing these routines and taking these reps in the spring, right? So you spent, you know, 6-8 months with basically the same routine, the same kind of thing going over and over and over and over. And then all of a sudden, like, you know, I mean, it's like, I enjoy playing golf. I'm not good at golf. But I do go out there and like I'll hack around.
Yeah.
And it's incredible the difference when I play with people who golf regularly, when I play with people who go to the driving range and people who, like, you know, it's amazing. Like, oh shoot, man, that guy's pretty good. And so I'll go start going to the driving range and I'll just hit the same ball over and over and over and over, the same swing. And then I'll go play golf and then I'm like, oh, I'm playing better. Yeah. And then I won't go to the driver, you know, I won't go hit whatever. And then I go back out there and just show up and it's like, oh man, I suck again. Right. And I think there is some of that to quarterback play in college football where it is like, man, if you're not getting those same routines, it doesn't matter how good you are. The routine is almost as important as the talent. And so, yeah, Texas fans also, man, they were Texas. Also, they've been telling me for 3 years, they're going to beat Georgia and we beat them by 25, you know, Kirby Smart calling up onside kick. When the whole week leading up to Georgia, Texas, Steve Sarkisian said in an interview, that man said in an interview, special teams are going to be very important. Like, they got us in the SEC championship game with a fake punt. So, you know, but basically, like, we're going to be ready. Like, the opening kickoff of the game. Okay, JP, I got to go through this. The opening kickoff of the game, Chris Fowler, if you listen to the call, Georgia, Texas last year, Chris Fowler said, special teams are going to be very important tonight. Both of these coaches trying to get an edge any way they can as the opening kickoff happens. And then Kirby Smart still caught an onside kick up 11 in the fourth quarter and still got it. I'm like, dude, okay. So Texas fans, listen, if your coach couldn't see what was coming, y'all couldn't see what was coming after talking about it all week, you won't be able to understand what an injury actually is, like what it actually does. Like, y'all just – Yeah.
John, when we talk about OU Georgia, we talk about obviously how the seasons are going to flesh out, but we know that we're going to have a game pretty early on, I believe week four of the season, first SEC game, our first SEC game. Your guys are second because, as you said, you got Arkansas the week before. So some people might say, not me. Some people might say we're your first SEC game, but, you know, not me. Anyways, we are going to be coming down to Athens, which will be, if I'm not mistaken, will be our first time ever.
It will be.
Coming to Athens and being in Georgia for that purpose. So I'm excited, man. I know a lot of Sooners fans are excited. We travel well. We will be down there. I potentially, personally, will be there. Looking forward to that. But let's talk a little bit, man, briefly about this game. You know, I'm gonna try to have you on later on in the season when we, you know, go against each other. But let's break it down a little bit. You know, obviously Oklahoma coming off a playoff appearance, Georgia as well coming off of that. What are we looking for in this matchup?
Man, there's going to be a lot of juice in this thing. It's the second meeting ever between these two teams. The only other time was that Rose Bowl, which was instant classic. Instant classic.
It was.
Sorry, I had to.
No, it's okay. I mean, I got Baker's jersey on right now. Yeah. I'm crying, but
that was not Baker's fault, dude. That was classic. Man, classic Big 12 defense on both sides of that game. Anyway. That's the last time I mentioned. No, I think Georgia, Oklahoma is going to be, there's going to be a ton of juice. It's going to be the first SEC game for Oklahoma, first time in visiting Athens, the second SEC game for Georgia, but the SEC home opener for Georgia this year. I think it's really going to come down to Mateer. It's really, to me, it's going to be Mateer versus that secondary that I talked about a few minutes ago that has a little bit more experience. And Venable's defense versus, you know, a more experienced Georgia offense, but still a lot of young receivers, right? A lot of guys that highly recruited, didn't play a lot last year. And then you got a couple of transfers that have come in. And so, so I think like that young wide receiver room versus is going to have to show up in order for Georgia to beat Oklahoma. I think Oklahoma is going to have, you know, maybe the advantage on the defensive side of the ball versus Georgia offense. But Mateer, it's going to be the same thing. I think both teams are going to, their defense is going to have an advantage over the opponent's offense. And so it's going to come down to which the wide receivers and the quarterbacks, who can make the most plays. And we'll see. I think, you know, as we see the season start and we see these teams go out there, see what they got, I think we'll know a little bit more. But my early take is like, whoever can make the most plays versus two really good defenses, going to win the football game.
Yeah, I truly think, as you said, man, it's going to come down to who can do the most. You know for sure both these defenses are going to be locked in. Offensively, I think for us, it's about can we run the football at all? We haven't been able to the last 2 years, and I know it's going to be a tough task to say, okay, let's start doing that in the SEC conference slate against Georgia in Athens. But man, what a better time than any to start that way. I'm not looking for 250, 300 yards on the ground. Nobody's looking for that. I mean, 120 would be okay. 100, 130, something that gives John Mateer some breathing room to be able to, you know, to see, to hold those linebackers for a second. Because last year it was just the John Mateer show a lot of the time, and he was having to figure stuff out on his own because we didn't have a running game. And so if we can do that, I think it gives us a better chance. Same against you guys, man. I think if you can make things easier for Gunner and really more easier on your young wide receivers, especially when it comes to the defenses and how aggressive both of these defenses often are. You know, if we can get an advantage, you guys can get an advantage early on the running game, I think that's going to be a pretty big deal. But I think ultimately special teams could come into factor too. I mean, we got the Lou Groza Award winner coming back. And so, you know, if he can still be in form and help us in terms of like being in field goal range, you know, some different things like that. I think those in these type of games, that's what you need. But I'm definitely looking forward to it, man. Like you said, you know, you got two big time programs, big name programs, going to be marquee matchup. People are going to be excited about it. Hopefully college game day's there that week. You know, what else could you want in college football, man?
Man, yeah, that's exactly what you want. And I think you're exactly right. I think I'll tell you this. Georgia's lost one game in Sanford Stadium since 2019. That was last year versus Alabama. And one of the things Alabama was able to do, the way they were able to beat Georgia, is they just converted third downs. And one of the ways that they did that is they were able to run the ball. And so you're going to have to run the ball. You're going to have to. Like, there's no, like, you said, what better time? It's like, yeah, you're going to lose the game if you don't run the ball versus Georgia, period. It's just like, to your point, you don't have to have 200 or 300 yards, but you got to be able to run it in order to convert third downs, set up screens to convert third downs. It's really going to come down to can you get off – can you stay on the field on third down on offense, get off the field on third down defense, and we'll see how it goes, man.
Yeah, it should be fun. It should be fun. Could be. Yeah. Let's talk about, in that vein, man, continue just to speak on a little bit of the coaches' conversation that we were having at the beginning of the episode. Brent Venables, Kirby Smart, you know, both of them in their own rights, obviously defensive, you know, geniuses. Kirby's done so much as a head coach, man. Like, he cemented himself as, I believe, the best coach in Georgia history. And cementing himself, I think, as a college football Hall of Fame type of head coach. And so when we ask this question, it's not that Kirby per se has anything to prove, just like maybe Brent certainly does as a head coach. But what are things that are holding both of them back from hitting their ceiling? And I think in Kirby's term, where his ceiling at this point should be looking towards being, can he catch Saban, right? Like, can he? Yeah. And I know that may seem lofty, but I mean, again, he's won a back-to-back. They're at the top of the SEC table almost every year. And so he's tracking that way. It doesn't seem like he's going anywhere anytime soon. And so is that something he can potentially attain, get to that, you know, 4 or 5 national championship mark at Georgia? Yeah. And then for Brent Venables, I think it's like, you know, hey, how are you going to prove that you can bring a national championship to Oklahoma? So.
Yeah, I think I'll start with Kirby. I think, you know, kind of Kirby Smart, I think he's made most of his career at Georgia has had quarterbacks who were floor raisers but not ceiling raisers, right? Mm-hmm. The 2 years that he won, when he won back-to-back national championships, Stetson Bennett, of all people, was a ceiling raiser, right? Like, he was a guy who was like, okay, when the game's on the line versus Ohio State in the Peach Bowl and you got to make a play, like, that guy was a gamer. Like, he was going to make a play. He was a guy who, you know, national championship versus Alabama. He fumbles the ball in Alabama, fumbles in Alabama's territory. They get the ball, they go and take the lead. And then he comes back down, you know, a couple of series later and throws a 40-yard, you know, bomb for a touchdown. Like just a ceiling raiser, right? It's the team, the offense is significantly better when this guy's on the field. And I think with Gunnar Stockton, he's a floor raiser, right? Like, which means, you know, there are plenty of other QBs that you could roll out there that would be worse. But he's got to become a ceiling raiser. And I think that's just Kirby in general. I think going forward, if he's going to win, you know, two or three more national championships before he hangs it up, he's going to have quarterbacks in particular that are ceiling raisers and not just floor raisers. And I think he's trying to do that. I mean, I think he, you know, Colton Nussmeier committed to Georgia. You got Jaden Wade, who is committed as of now, two of the top quarterbacks in 2027, 2028 classes. But that's what's going to hold Kirby back, period. Because I think, like, you know, you can the defense is always going to be good. I think the offensive line has proved that it's going to, you know, it's going to continue to be good. Wide receiver, maybe, you know, would be another one. But I think for Kirby, he's settled, and I don't mean that derogatorily because he's won a lot. Yeah. But he's settled for quarterbacks who are floor raisers, he has a formula. You plug this guy in, and this guy is going to win, and that's worked. But what's happening now is like, okay, that formula has to include a guy stepping up and making plays late in the game in January if you're going to get there, right? And so I think Nick Saban, I mean, you saw it. You had Tua, you had Jalen Hurts, you had all those guys. And even going back, freaking A.J. McCarron was a guy who's like, I mean, that guy was – people call him game manager, but the guy raised the ceiling. Like, the guy would find ways to win. For Venables, I think it's just consistently – the offense has a hold up its end consistently. And I think for him, what's holding him back is really just the – can he figure out his offensive identity that's going to work for Oklahoma as a program in his system? Can he figure out his system on the offensive side of the ball? Like, what is that, right? Because he's moved around a little bit from Lebby, which is more spread, to Arbuckle, which was kind of in the same vein, but a little bit more air raid. It's like, you got to figure out, okay, what is my best path to offensive consistency? And what's the level that the offense has to perform at in order for me to know, like, my defense can hold up its end of the bargain. The offense has to be here consistently. The other thing I'll say is, like, he doing the two job thing is tough. Like, Sarkisian, I think it's what's holding Sarkisian back as well. Man, it's hard to be a play caller and a head coach at the same time.
Yeah.
Kirby Smart, like, there was a reason that when Kirby Smart came, hired Mel Tucker. Like, that was his first hire, was a guy who was an actual defensive coordinator. Even though Kirby Smart heavily involved in, you know, the game plan, heavily involved in the calls during the game, he you know, has the space throughout the week where he doesn't have to be the one that's, like, in charge. And so I think for Venables, like, I know you got, is it Todd Bates? Is that the guy over there? Mm-hmm. Yeah. But, you know, like Venables is going to, like, yeah, I mean, I think Todd Bates is, like, really, really solid guy, right? But at some point, you have to say, as a head coach, my job is the CEO of the program, and I have to care about the details across the board. And therefore, I have to give up this thing that I made my name on and trust somebody else with it. And I think Kirby Smart, you know, he had to do that. And it wasn't like he had young guys too, like, you know, Dan Lanning, Glenn Schumann, like, those guys were young and smart, but he really did. He found a way to be like, I'm out of it because I got to focus on all these details. And I think Sarkisian, you know, like you saw it, that onside kick that we were joking about a few minutes ago. I mean, I think part of the reason is like, okay, it's change of possession. Sarkisian is the main play caller for Texas. Like he's mentally getting ready for the offense, like getting ready for them to go out, getting ready to execute on the plays. And that special teams moment right there, it gets lost. Yeah. And so I think you just have to, you know, I think you at some point, I think that'll hurt Brent Venables too. If he doesn't like fully say, hey, this guy is it. And that may mean going out and hiring, you know, somebody who's done it for a long time and who can come in and just do it. But those would be my two things.
Yeah, I agree, honestly, on both of what you said, both for Kirby, finding a quarterback that can consistently be that guy. They've got all the talent around him. You know, the offenses have been good enough in previous years, but it's just like when you get to that level, you're going to need guys like you said, that can make those plays. So I really can't I have no disagreements there, especially with where he's wanting to go in terms of winning multiple more national championships before he maybe decides to hang it up, which, I mean, he still could have another 15, 20 years, really, if he wanted to. Brent Venables, yes, the offense, man, like that's what it comes down to, in my opinion, is like the year we had an elite offense, which was with Dylan Gabriel and Jeff Lebby, like we were a top 10 offense. Like we should have been in the playoff that year, and the defense hadn't caught up yet. It's just been super unfortunate because it was Brent Venables' second year. He's still getting his guys in there, right? Yep. And then his third year, which is last year, for his third year, we had better defense in the first year of the SEC, and then fourth year, you start to see finally like it's elite now. But now the offense is still kind of just not being able to find its footing. New coordinator, quarterback gets his hand hurt. And so, like, can we see Oklahoma finally with a very good defense to elite defense and at least a good, you know, above average offense that can sustain some drives sometimes, that can, you know, be a threat to some defenses so that, you know, when our defense, you know, has turnovers, we can go score immediately, like, and put games out of reach. Like, those are the things that are, you know, ultimately holding him back as a head coach. And I think I'm still on the fence, honestly, about the coordinator thing, because I understand what you're saying. And I can definitely resonate with some of those points. I think Ryan Day is probably the only one that's done it doing both, right, that I can think of.
Yeah. The year he won it, he hired Chip Kelly. Now, people can say, like, yeah. So the year he won it, he went out and hired Chip Kelly, was head coach at UCLA and left to become the offensive coordinator of Ohio State.
I forgot about that. I thought he
was. And Ohio State fans will say that Ryan Day got more involved in the play calling when the playoff, and maybe that's true. But I think from what I read, from my research when I was shit posting about Steve Sarkisian doing this last year, was Jimbo Fisher was the last one at Florida State to win a national championship while also holding majority play calling duties on either side of the ball. And so I just think about it. Like, if I'm Oklahoma fans, it's not a huge deal, right? But like the Ryan Day, the year that Ohio State finally got over the hump, he went out and hired Chip Kelly to come in and be an offensive coordinator, right? And and before that, he had called plays and he had had Brian Hartline, you know, co-OC and like, you know, whatever. But like, I think we're just in an era where with transfer portal, with roster building, roster management, like, I know Oklahoma, you know, just paid Jim Nagy a bunch of money as the GM, but there's a lot of detail that goes into that. And I think if you're splitting brain space, owning a defensive game plan, or an offensive game plan, I just think it's tough. I think it's tough to win, sustained win, in that way. Now, that being said, you know, the reason that these guys do it, reason Sarkisian does it, reason that Venables does it, is because they get results, right? I mean, it's like, dude, like, Are you kidding me? Like, watch the Oklahoma defense and tell me the defense that Brent Venables should give up, you know, being the majority, like, defensive yeah. play caller. Yeah. I mean, that, but that's the thing, right? It's like, I think Kirby Smart, you know, again, I think one of the best things that he did as a young head coach, and I think he probably got advice from Nick Saban when he did it, was hire actual defensive coordinators and still be very involved, like majorly involved in the defense and in the game planning and all those things. But when it comes down to who's responsible for building the game plan, for making the calls in the game and all those things, it's not Kirby. And I think, and it wasn't Saban. And I think that's where Venables and Sarkisian and some of those guys are going to have to figure it out at some point.
Yeah. Yeah. It'll be interesting to see kind of how it fleshes out with it all. I think that if I'd like to see him with a competent offense, and then I probably would make my determination, because we just haven't seen it yet. And we saw his defense get us to a playoff game last year. And so it's like, man, like if we had competent offense, maybe it would work out. But man, John, thank you so much, bro, for spending some time coming on SEC Smoke, brother. Go ahead and tell the people where they can find you at.
Yeah. You can follow me at John Tweet Sports. I also have a little venture called Speakeasy Sports you'll be hearing more about. But at John Tweet Sports, if you're a Georgia fan, tune in at Dog Social Club. You can come hang out with us, and we'll do this again before Oklahoma, Georgia.
Indeed, we will. If you are a Georgia fan, you happen to be here. I'm also just like your boy. I'm a reasonable guy. You know, I'm not gonna come at anybody sideways. I care about ball for real. So go ahead and give me a follow at @Indy_Sooner. If you're an Oklahoma fan, just remember, make sure you like, comment, subscribe on this video. You know, OU Insider is doing a ton of content. We're the biggest platform on OU and OU sports right now. You know, sitting at 37,000. We're trying to get to 40,000 subscribers before the season starts. So please make sure you subscribe. If you like what we're doing, like our videos, like this video. Again, go give John a follow. Remember, as always, it's no bias. It's just smoke. We'll see you next time.